Your WhatsApp's for Pippa
on 072-567-1567.
Right, lots of messages coming through about discontinued products. We'll make some space for that a little bit later in the show and give some feedback to Vera on her chocolate. For now, though, this week's food feature. And, you know, a braai is the most quintessentially South African of meals. So it might come as a surprise to find a fire burning and some chops and wors on the grill in the heart of Paris. But that is exactly what is happening, thanks to a man named Cobus Botha, who has taken the art of the perfect fire all the way from the Karoo to the banks of the River Seine. And not only is he running braai classes in France and cooking up a storm at outdoor events there, he's also recently released a new cookbook called Le Braai, braai with a bit of je ne sais quoi. I caught up with him during his brief visit to Cape Town a short while ago. Let's take a listen to that interview. Cobus, I know you've led a very extraordinary life, and it starts on a farm in the Klein Karoo. It ends up in Paris with a whole lot of experience crammed in the middle. Won't you just tell us briefly your background and how you got into the food business?
Like most other things, par hasard, by chance, I grew up in a small town and a small farm. And finally, I went to Cape Town to school here and to university, but I always wanted to make movies. And then a movie came to Cape Town, big American movie, and I stood in the office until they employed me. And then a few years after that, I started producing because I like to be the boss. Yeah. And I did that for about 15 years. So I worked all over the world. I did a lot of overseas productions in South Africa. And I met my wife like that. She's a French director. And that's how I sort of ended up in France, because we were living in Cape Town and Paris, which is not a bad life.
Okay.
And then, we had a child, and I was 40 at the time, so I wanted to be a dad more than, if you do movies, you're just never at home. You're always somewhere else. So, we both changed our life to have more, homely lives. And I thought, stupidly, that restoration would be an interesting thing, which it was. But I had a restaurant in the south of France, and the same thing for the summer, and one on a ski slope for the winter. Mm. Never saw my son, so I stopped that, and basically moved my stuff onto wheels. I opened a small restaurant in Paris, and started doing braais all around France. And, I mean, for sure, I took the imagination of the French, and I had publishers coming to me. I've published 3 cookbooks in France now. The one here is the second one, which is great. Jan Hendrik took the pictures.
I was going to ask, because the photography is beautiful, but now that makes sense. Okay.
So that's how I got into food. And in fact, the whole barbecue thing is interesting, because I worked with closed barbecues, because my first restaurant, I wanted to do an open fire barbecue, you know, like we do in South Africa,
right,
Lapa. And the 1 month before the opening, the fireman came to me and said, "No way you're going to do that. You're going to burn down the south of France." So I said, "Look, I'm from South Africa. I'm from the Karoo. It's much drier there. I won't burn it down." However, they didn't take my word. So I had to have these barbecues made, and they arrived in time. Very stressful, because I had to learn how to work with them. But, you know, if you can cook with a fire, and I've been doing that since I was a little boy, it helps. And so by chance, I had these closed barbecues that finally ended up being pulled all around France. And some of them are, you know, the biggest one is about 12 meters long. I can cook for 2,000 people on it in one go. And I have the absolute joy now, because with the restaurants, it's very nice to start the restaurant. It's very exciting. It's very challenging. You know, you have to think out a lot of plans. Then the things, if it starts working, you know, it becomes the same thing every day. And then, if you change something, like half the clients are upset, because now you've changed something, because in fact they wanted the thing that used to be there.
Yep.
You have the same people coming 3 times a week, which should be nice, but I get completely sick of that. I cannot do the same thing over and over again. So, and I started the mobile barbecuing, and then I decided, but this is in fact what I want to do, and I want to take it into a next level. So I closed the restaurant, and I upped the game with the barbecue, because for me, and I've been lucky in that I've been all around the world. I ate in so many great restaurants. My favorite meals have always been made by old women because they cook better than anybody else. They've been doing it all their life, all around the world, or around a fire. Because around the fire, you don't just have the food. You have much more than the, I mean, yeah. South Africans know that very well. So I managed to bring that to France. So like the French, if you invite them for a barbecue, they come to eat the food. So I've got it now that it's part of, if I do an event, the barbecue is part of the whole thing from the beginning. I managed to get the food that I make in, I don't know how to put that. It's not haute cuisine. But for instance, I work with 3-star Michelin chefs together with them. I do the big stuff, and they do the
fancification of everything.
Exactly, the fancification. Because the beauty for me in what I do in my cooking is not the thing on the plate. It is the whole. It's the huge thing. It's the fires. It's opening the barbecue in front of people, and you know them really enjoying that, and by the time they eat, it's the whole game is won already, because you know they really feel like doing,
they've been part of the drama and the whole experience.
Yeah,
so the kind of barbecue obviously had to be adapted. You would have grown up cooking on a traditional open fire braai in South Africa, in the Karoo. It's
grill.
Now a huge grill on wheels with a big metal handle that lifts the lid up, etc. So you've got that rigged up on a mobile trailer of sorts that you simply drag around the country with you.
Exactly. And I've got lots of them. I think I've got 18 barbecues in total.
Wow.
So I do events. Like every year I do the Rhine wine tasting, or every second year when it comes, it's between 5,000 and 6,000 people.
Fantastic.
Over 4 days. And we've been doing it a few years now. People love it. It's impossible to do, but it's such a, me and my team of about 15 people work day and night. And it's a huge, it's a bit like making a movie, you know, on when you're on location, because you really have an intense time together, and then it's over and you move on.
Yeah.
And that's great. And I cook, I do things like a catering company that do all the things for the minister, you know, the really high level stuff, Portela Shabbat. Same thing. I do the big pieces, and they have a little ball like this. It's got 7 layers and a pip on top, you know, with a piece of grass, which is very nice. And I enjoy doing that because I love working in the opposite, you know, of having me. I work with huge things and fire and wood and metal. And, you know, when I always laugh at the picture of a chef in his white apron, because I am black everywhere. At the end of the season, my hands, I can't clean them anymore. I'm totally black and full of burns and things. And I love that. It's an adventure to do it. I meet new people and interesting people all the time, because now the people that I cook for, and generally on a level of appreciation of food that is interesting. So they know if they're eating something good. It's not just somebody eating, you know, like, God, it drives me crazy in South Africa to go around and you cannot find boulevards that somebody made their own spices. They all buy the spice at some place. And you just taste the spice with the monosodium glutamate and all that. It's the easiest thing in the world. Just mix your own spices, make your own
course,
you know. And that's something that's worked very well for me. In our season, well, over the last 3 months, we've made more than a ton of wars just for us to cook.
Sure.
And when I go back now, a huge company asked me to market the wars. So it's another adventure that's going to come.
So you still never see your son by the sounds of things. Have you managed to find that balance you were looking for?
No, I found the balance completely. In fact, his mother is very accommodating. We're not together anymore, but we live very close to each other. So when I'm working so hard, he stays with her a lot. And then, you know, in the winter season when I'm working less, or I'm writing books, or I'm, you know, doing other stuff, we spend a lot more time together. And like, for instance, now we have almost a whole month in South Africa, and
fantastic.
I can share the things I love about it, which is so great.
Fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about the ingredients. I mean, traveling in France, the one thing that strikes you is, I mean, the beautiful markets, being able to stroll and choose beautiful seasonal produce straight off the farm to a market table. It's a different way of finding your food. It's so much just fresher and closer to the produce than buying it off a supermarket shelf, as so many of us do. Have you had to adapt to what's available in France versus what you would have been using here? How big has that shift been?
You know, when I started the restaurant in the beginning, I had to basically redevelop all the recipes, because you don't find stuff in France that you find, like crème tarte. It just doesn't exist there. And several things. Also, the spices are different strength. But, you know, you find that's a nice thing to do. You find the way of doing that. But now what I'm doing is a lot more. I work with almost nothing, because I've developed, you know, who's this chef that just died, the famous French chef?
Anthony Bourdain. Robichon.
Yeah. His whole thing was finally no more than three ingredients. I got there a few years ago. I've got four ingredients. I work with good meat, which you can find everywhere in France. For instance, they have probably 30 different kinds of chicken, you know, different races of chicken. They've got different breeds of chicken. They've got many different kinds of beef. They kept with the old, with the old breeds.
Yeah.
So you can get good meat, salt and pepper, mainly white pepper, and technique. And everything else, like, for instance, the fish that I do big 10-kilogram salmons, and I cook them whole. And what makes a fish nice, whatever fish you cook, in the beginning, you have to get the fat to boil inside the skin on the meat of the fish, because that changes the whole thing.
Flavor, yeah.
But when you've done that, you've got to take the fish away from the heat, and then it's got to sort of be barely hot to cook. Okay. So this I do the fish like that, these salmons, and then finally when you peel after 2 or 3 hours, imagine a salmon for 3 hours in a barbecue, so it's very low temperature. When you peel the skin off, it's a beautiful thing to see. And it's just juice and delicious salmon, and I serve it with nothing, not even salt and pepper. I put it there if people want it, but nobody takes it because you just taste the fish, which is so good.
So going back to things tasting of themselves, and I mean, letting the ingredients speak for themselves, I guess, is the term.
Yeah.
I know a lot of our listeners would have questions about what sort of fuel source you're using, etc. There's always the debate of the gas braai versus the wood versus the briquettes, etc. What's your favorite, and what do you work with on these huge braais that you're taking around?
I work with wood.
Okay.
And because I'm in Europe, I work with the wood that's there, hardwood. I work with oak and with châtaigne. I don't know what châtaigne, this little thing that's in the, that you roast over the fire.
Chestnut
trees, things like that. And it works fine. I've tried apple and pear and all that, and people always say, okay, you know, the taste, there's no taste difference. But it's one of those things. People love the idea. People I've cooked, they love the idea of finding something else that could change something, you know, that could, it's like the secret recipe. And in fact, which makes it hard for me to write cookbooks, because I'm much more into technique than the secret recipe. The recipe to me is the simplest part of it. To cook that thing perfectly, that's the
hidden ingredient,
And that makes it extraordinary or not. Because if you don't cook it well, you can put whatever you want on it and you're just going to be eating sauce. You're not going to be eating, or spices, you know, you're not going to be eating eating something that's well cooked.
Corbis, going through the book, I noticed several recipes where you were brining grapes, which is something I've never seen before. But it makes sense because sweetness distilled with
it becomes too sweet. You have to put some crème fraîche or a bit of ice cream next to it because it's too sweet. But it's really delicious. I mean, wine is basically, I mean, fermented grapes, and the sweeter wines are evaporated, you know, fermented grapes.
Yeah.
So if you are doing evaporation of the juice of the grape in the barbecue, and you have the slight smoke of it and that sweetness, it is really delicious. But I've started, you know, I got to a point where I know how to cook most kinds of meat. And I do big pieces, you know, because I mainly do big stuff.
Yeah.
And then so I started concentrating on vegetables. So now when I do things, sometimes I take two barbecues and one is just for vegetables because there's a real pleasure in cooking something that one is not used to cooking.
Yeah.
And my vegetables have become, you know, something that I'm, that people absolutely love and me too. For instance, in the summer in France, I put all the summer vegetables in the barbecue. Mm. I cook it, and then we cut it up afterwards. We make a warm salad with it. Just you know, a bit of oil and salt and pepper, and it is it's really extraordinary. If you're at home, you're going to grill your vegetables. So you've got to find stuff with either a thick skin that you can grill properly. You can do the papillote, the packets that we do too. I don't really consider that barbecuing, but that's, you know, you're cooking with a fire, so it's a pleasure, you know, just chopping up. I think I've got some recipes of that in there. Mm. You chop up the stuff and you cook it in the fire, which is really nice. There's stuff you can put in the fire, you know, like potatoes and sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
You just take little baby potatoes, you boil them, and then you crush them a little bit and you grill them on the fire, you know, with a bit of olive oil. It's so simple. It is so delicious. And then, you know, you take parsley and you chop it fine and you throw it away because you should never put parsley on anything. It's disgusting. Whenever I see something with a piece of parsley and half of, like, you know, the white tomato on it, it drives me nuts.
Okay. No parsley. We got the message. I mean, I'm looking at your recipe for the Bride Veg, excuse me, with garlic vinaigrette in the book. You've got whole brinjals. I mean, that I would imagine there you're talking about the thick skin veggies. You could just, would you do that on the grill or in the coals, the brinjal?
Look, in the coals is maybe a bit too, but standing right next to it, because it can stand up a little bit. In fact, if you can stand it next to the fire from the beginning, when it starts falling over, it means it's soft.
Yeah.
And then you just scrape out the inside and you mix it with some garlic that you've grilled, you know, in the whole bulb of garlic that you've grilled. Fantastic. You squeeze it out, you mix it up. And then people tell me that's really delicious because I hate brinjal too.
Are there any particular kinds of meat that you can't get in France to match what you're used to working with? I mean, you're from the Karoo. The Karoo lamb is world famous. Have you been able to find lamb of an equivalent quality in France?
That is a definite no.
Okay.
It's hard to explain. You know, also, firstly, France is cut up into little pieces where they do AOCs, which is a controlled Appellation Contrôlée.
Yep.
There was some guy, in fact, I had a restaurant called Karoo in the south of France, and there's some professor in Pretoria who said, look, you can't use the name Karoo like that, you know. So I said, it's got nothing to do with Karoo. To make an AOC, to make a controlled appellation of the Karoo is the size of, it's bigger than France. Mm. And the good meat doesn't come from everywhere. People are probably going to shoot me for this, but the good meat comes from the part, I mean, in my opinion, like north of Beaufort West, you need to be in quite a dry area that's hilly. And because the herbs that grow there, if in a good raining season, the herbs that in the bottom of the valley are sweet, and they eat those herbs all the time. If it's too dry, then yeah, that goes high, and it's more sour herbs, and you taste that too. But what makes the Karoo lamb so extraordinary is that eating those sweet herbs.
Yeah.
And that you cannot, I've got family farming there, and it is just, I will make the trip there just for a braai of the lamb chops.
Yeah.
Number one. The second one, the Icelandic lamb. These lambs, they just, summertime comes, they just let them loose on the island. It's a massive island. And they go and eat moss that grows, volcanic moss that grows, you know, on the mountains there. And at the end of summer, they round them and the lambs up and, you know, then they slaughter them. It's the same thing. It's what they eat.
Yeah.
And then after that, there's not, I mean, New Zealand lamb is quite nice and Scottish lamb is quite nice. The French have got a thing called prix salé, which is in the same principle. They eat herbs that grow in salted water.
Yes.
So, you know, so they have salt in them already. And that's not bad, but you know, it's the price of a small airplane with leather seats to eat a chop of that.
Any other South African ingredients you miss or you try and take back with you for now? What goes in your suitcase?
The
with
fish.
You? Yeah.
We are so lucky with the fish that we have. The yellowtail, the geelbek, the snook, the galjoen. I mean, I've just been up and down the coast and eating fresh fish. It is extraordinary. When I got to France, the seafood is something, it's mainly eaten raw. And what they have is like a delicious thing, but it's, you know, shellfish and all of that.
Yeah.
And they tend to fillet a fish and cook it and put sauce over it, which drives me completely crazy because I'm a total minimalist
with fish. Yeah.
You give me a fresh fish, it's the best meal you can have. We used to go, for instance, we'd go diving, and if you're in a place like Hermanus or that spot up the coast, if you're in a place where the drop off is immediate, so the water is deep immediately, you know, you can shoot fish right there. So somebody would be making a fire on the side. We'd jump in, you shoot a fish, you throw it out, it gets grilled. There is no better meal than that. There is no money that can pay for that meal. Mm. It's just extraordinary. Fish is the big thing here that I really miss. When I've got a guy, Manny, in Somerset, I stay in Somerset, in the Strand. The day before I fly, I call him. I say, Manny, I'm coming. I need my fish. And on the way from the airport, I go and pick up that fish and I go and cook it. So that's
your
a
last
real thing.
Meal as you leave. Fantastic. I know Jan Hendrik goes with the buchu stuffed in his suitcase, and he was telling us how he's playing around in his restaurant with guavas and with sort of a buchu powder over his desserts. I mean, do you take ingredients back with you and use them, or is it just when you hear you love eating it and you've got to leave it behind?
Yeah, I don't take in because of the way that I cook.
Yeah.
Look, Jan Hendrik and I are almost, I love the guy.
Yeah.
We spend, you know, a lot of, he did the pictures for the book, and we buddies. And we even, there was at one stage, they wanted to do a TV thing with us, with me, like the total opposites, me with the big stuff and him with a, with a finesse. He is an extraordinary talent. He thinks of stuff that I cannot even imagine. You know, it's just so he makes things that are unique. It's a totally different way of cooking, but he creates tastes that haven't existed before, and he uses, you know, tastes from his childhood.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a real. I think he should have had 2 stars by now already because he just. There's one thing I never ate it, but there's one thing he told me. He said when people come into the restaurant. He has his mos bolikis like in a bulb on the table, like in a little tree, and then they rise during the meal. And at the end of the meal, they take it and they cook it quickly for the people for
dessert. Yeah.
I mean, it's just that's just a wonderful mind that can think of that.
Really creative. No, but as you say, a very different style of cooking from what you're doing. So yeah. Conversely, so we've talked about the things you miss from South Africa. For a South African who might find themselves in Paris for the first time, what's the French eating experience you would recommend?
The French will kill me for this because they see it as a sort of a lesser meal. They have the best chicken in the world. They have, I don't know, they got like 30 different breeds of chicken. Mm. And you have you have chickens that cost the price of a lamb there, but I'd buy one once a year and it's every bit of that chicken is delicious, you know. They struggle a bit with the bones, but you know, the rest is, some of them are sewn up in bags. So the chicken is really great. South Africans are a bit wary of that. But French cheese is really something, and it's hard to tell people that the stuff doesn't taste at all like it smells, because it's not, you know, it doesn't make any sense to us to that. But most of the cheeses are really soft and delicious and creamy and you know, just great. I had my first cheese, I was at the Cannes Film Festival. And I rented an apartment that was above a cheese shop. I sniffing, what is this smell here? I was completely new, you know, in France and in traveling and all of that. And finally, I found the shop downstairs. But I'm not scared to eat anything, you know. I'm gonna try a bit. So I tried the cheese, and my God, how delicious can stuff! It's just luckily it was a good cheese shop too. So you know, you go from thinking something smells like sour socks. Until, you know, spending 3 days in the bush, and when you take your shoes off, your mouth starts watering.
Gomez, it's been great having you join us. Thank you so much for making time to chat to me on what I know is a very busy trip to South Africa and to Cape Town. The book is called Le Braai, Braai with a bit of je ne sais quoi. The author is Kobus Boeta. It's available in all the big bookstores and I assume online as well, Kobus?
Yeah, it is, yeah. I think.
You mentioned a Facebook page. Won't you just remind us what that address is for listeners who'd like to go and take a look at some more of your recipes?
And Instagram, because that's more in English than the Facebook is more in French,
okay.
@Kobus Braai.
That was Courbis Boete of Le Braille fame. And nice to hear from John in Cape Town, enjoying the French accent filtering through the Afrikaans first language. Yeah, John, it was fascinating interviewing him, actually watching. You could see there were times where he was thinking in French very clearly and had to flip it round into Afrikaans and then into English to respond to me. It was quite an interesting conversation as a result. But please do look out for the book. It's published by Straight Lifestyle, available in stores now at around about 250 Rand a copy.